application for subdivision and rezoning for 146 Magnus Avenue under file DASZ 23 of 2009. In accordance with the City of Winnipeg Charter and the Development Procedures Bylaw, this is a combined hearing, and the following item will also be heard at the same time. Item 2 is an application for conditional use for 146 Magnus Avenue under file DCU 143329 of 2009D.
Is the applicant present? Would you please come here, state your name and address? Madam Clerk, I believe we have also a list here of those who are in support of the application.
That is correct.
This is a list here?
That is correct.
Okay, and I understand we do have people in opposition to this application. Okay, you can start.
Carlton Street.
Okay, proceed.
Actually, I have a PowerPoint presentation I was hoping to do. We can set that up if possible. Thank you. think I'm ready to go here.
So thank you for the opportunity to speak with you this evening about the Magnus Center, Inc. Addictions and Co-Worker and Mental Health Facility proposal. My name is Ian Krochak. I'm the executive director of the proposal. And with the primary responsibilities of facilitating a community-inclusive consultation process and meeting the rezoning requirements with the City of Winnipeg. Tonight, I hope to tell you a little bit about what we are, what we hope to accomplish, highlight the issues that were expressed in our many community consultations, clarify some information, and present the strategies we intend to implement to have a positive working relationship with the community of North Point Douglas. Magnus Center is a nonprofit organization with an established board of directors, and it's funded through Manitoba Healthy Living. Our four core objectives are to reduce and or eliminate mental health and addictions impacts on people's lives, create an accessible, seamless, and integrated continuum of care under one roof, to nurture an environment of collaboration, transparency, and recovery, and to be a valuable member of this community. We propose to serve men and women over the age of 18 who are making a conscious, voluntary decision to make a positive change in their life. These individuals have an identifiable addiction to drugs and or alcohol. They also might be struggling with a mental health issue. We call these co-occurring disorders. I should note that people with acute mental health issues only will be seen by our centralized intake department for an assessment and a referral to the most appropriate resource. Well, we intend to redevelop the site, 146 Magnus Avenue, the former site of the Sharon Home. This is going to result in demolition of the North Wing, reconstruction of a small portion, and a renovation of existing spaces for programming. This will be done in collaboration with the Winnipeg Regional Health Authority, they're the facility managers, and actually owners of the facility, and MMP architects that will do the design and architecture. We have three primary addiction partners proposing to provide service in Magnus Center. We have Main Street Project. They're going to provide withdrawal management services, 20 beds, 10 for men, 10 for women, for a maximum stay of 7 to 10 days. We have the Addictions Foundation of Manitoba that will be providing first stage treatment, residential, for men, 38 beds for a maximum stay of 28 days, as well as they're bringing over their intensive day treatment and community-based programming. And thirdly, we have Behavioral Health Foundation that are bringing offices over for two functions, intake and outreach. I should note that these people all have been successful in their own right, and BHF and AFM have been operating residential neighborhoods currently. Should note, there's a couple of noteworthy things on this, our operational model. A collaborative care intake team will provide timely assessment with a team of professionals, psychologists, nurses, social workers, and doctors. We also intend to provide pre-treatment support services, 5 beds for men, 5 beds for women, as a form of waitlist management. The facility will accommodate approximately 110 staff, but the peak times are between 7:30 in the morning until 4 o'clock in the afternoon. We'll have offices for WHA facility management, shared resources in the form of kitchen staff, housekeeping, security, education and training spaces, satellite offices for collateral social service agencies, spaces for community bookings, and overall, the facility have less occupancy and smaller footprint. We had many community consultations starting in June 2008, but it culminated with a public meeting. Here's a copy of our invitation. We went across 2 days inviting people formally door-to-door, 160 homes and businesses. June 24th was our public meeting. We had 135 people in attendance. We had speakers, but mainly the main focus was to hear people's concerns. One way we did that was we wanted to see what people thought about what we can do in the back area that we're going to gain through the demolition and even the back park there. I'd like to run down 8 primary concerns that we heard and 2 questions. The current name of Magnus Center stigmatizes the community. The facility will lead to traffic congestion in and out of road parking. No chance to voice concerns. Safety risk for physical harm and property destruction. Behavior of visitors, i.e. the supplying of drugs to clients. They thought Magnus Center will increase drug use in the community. This is the over-concentration of social services in the area. It will reduce the property value. The facility will be making a profit. The facility will be full of criminals. And 2 questions. Can the community access facility space, and where are similar facilities as benchmarks? So I'd like to clarify some facts right now, please. This facility will have adequate parking because we'll have fewer employees and visitors. Sharon Home had approximately 50 to 60 visitors per week and 100 on the weekends. The withdrawal management unit that we're proposing will have no visiting unless it's for treatment purposes only. First and second stage residential treatment will have approximately 2 hours of visiting a day, 7 to 10 folks a day. Local employees should reduce the amount of vehicle traffic in the area, and internal security will question all suspicious activity. All clients will be assessed by staff prior to leaving the facility. All group walks will be supervised by staff. Everybody has a strict code of conduct during treatment. This is what they go in during the orientation process. Transportation will be arranged when treatment is over via bus pass, taxi voucher, or a family member. Clients do have a sense of pride in the places where they live for a short period of time. In fact, one study on this area said that local residents became more positive over time and actually felt more secure with residents there. Magnus will also have a strict no-tolerance policy for drugs and alcohol use for both staff and clients. Testimonials from the AFM and BHF will say that people do not use substances within close proximities of these facilities. Hourly rounds and an occupied building will create positive traffic. In fact, the study was saying, talking about alcohol attributable criminal offenses, providing brief treatment results in a 3% reduction in these types of crimes. So what I mean by that is, you know, we're providing the solution to some of the issues that currently exist in the neighborhood. Community support services and centrality is the key for something like this. You know, the increase of connectivity of city streets and improving public transit all do lead to positive treatment outcomes. I've now, in my search and research in this, I never found any empirical evidence saying it reduced property values. There was a study done by the Center for Applied Research in Mental Health found that an analysis of 18 different studies in this area found it didn't reduce property value or the number of units sold. There's also similar facilities as benchmarks. We can't look any further than our city. We have Behavioral Health Foundation in St. Norbert, the Addiction Foundation on Sherbourne and Portage. We also have Calgary's Renfrew Recovery Center, which is a 40-bed detox right in northeast residential Calgary. So this is what we've done as an organization in response to the public meeting on June 24th. The name of Magnus Center has been officially changed to River Point Center. So for the purpose of this presentation, I'd like to refer to it as River Point Center from here on in. OBO external rounds for security were increased to hourly. We increased our signage for security and the addition of mobile patrols. On July 29th and August 11th, residents had the opportunity to tour both Behavioral Health Foundation, AFM, and Main Street Project, tour the facilities, and learn about how they run their programs. We've provided updates on the Point Douglas Residents Committee website and the Point newsletter. As per your recommendation from last meeting, we conducted an open house on November 3rd. We had approximately 50 people there, really good turnout. And I would welcome you to see your community consultation summary that was in the public record package. As an overarching framework to ensure that we're accountable, we want to implement a good neighbor agreement, which we introduced at the public meeting. This has been successful in Europe and also many sectors in North America. It's basically saying, this is how we intend to be accountable, these are our objectives, with the ultimate vision of creating a positive urban experience. The Board of Directors for Magnus or River Point Center have made four core commitments to the community of North Point Douglas. The first one is local employment opportunities. We intend to do ongoing advertising for River Point Center positions in local media, liaison with local employment agencies, and the Point Douglas Residents Committee. Treatment access for local residents. Individuals from the area can access our centralized intake and assessment department. They can get a timely assessment and referral to the most appropriate resource. Upon leaving a program, they can access one of our aftercare programs. Access to facility space for the community. This will be ongoing scheduled use for community booking rooms, conference rooms, business functions, these types of things. I should mention that the Point Douglas Residents Committee have been working out of the 146 Magnus Avenue site for approximately 6 months. They're no longer there. But they've been wonderful partners, and I have to say that they've been holding me and the organization accountable every step of the way to ensure that we try to have an inclusive consultation. But no theme was more predominant than security during the consultations. So we proposed a four-pronged approach. The first one, continuing with 24-hour security, hourly rounds externally with mobile patrol. Residents have also been given the number for the front desk of 146 Magnus should they see anything. Main Street Project, should resources allow, will continue to monitor the back park for intoxicated persons. The second prong is, during the renovation process, should we be successful, the WHA will have security upgrades, and we have someone to speak to that here tonight. The third prong is establishing community relationships, which goes a long way. Point out this residence committee, Winnipeg Police Service. I should mention that we had representatives from the police service at both our public meeting on June 24th and our open house. Community safety groups, concerned residents, and as part of the Good Neighbor Agreement, create a community security council. And finally, the fourth prong is our investment in the Pritchard Boat Dog Plaza at the rear of the facility, on the back park along the river. Many residents have shared the concerns of illegal activity. So we tasked the landscape architect to do a crime prevention through environmental analysis design. Their recommendations were improvements in lighting, planting, and land use, recommended for a positive impact on that area. This would result in an approximate investment by our board of directors of $30,000 should our application be successful. So the key benefits. The primary focus of this facility is to assist Manitobans to eliminate the struggle with alcohol and or drugs. It is a place where they're going to abstain from this. WHA are experts in facility management. It's going to be a well-run, first-class facility. It's an innovative service, first of its kind in Winnipeg, with excellent treatment outcomes, and it will be in a community-inclusive and vibrant facility. And just in closing, I'd like to say that I've really come to appreciate the diversity of opinion that the people in the area do have regarding this project. We, as a board and as an organization, we appreciate the sensitive nature of this type of proposal. I would like to say that should we be successful in our application, we'll do everything that we can to make sure that we have a positive working relationship with the community. Thank you very much.
Mr. Krochek, before I call on the others are in support, they'll have a chance to put their views across. I have a question on the issue of public consultation. When this was at the community committee, I had laid it over for further consultation to take place also with our administration, as some changes were made in the application without the city services having a chance to put some input into it. Mm-hmm. Could you tell me, what was the biggest concern in your public consultation that you held from the area residents? I'm not talking about someone who lives on Sherbrooke Avenue mm-hmm. or someone who lives on Westbrook. I'm talking about people living in the immediate area. What was their main concern about your development?
It was undoubtedly safety. We had many discussions, whether it was in a formal forum or on someone's porch or front lawn. I mean, safety was a predominant theme, the common denominator, if you will. Their concerns were around, people wandering around the neighborhood. What were we going to do internally to make sure that doesn't happen? And we understood, I think, from there, the optics of them looking from the outside in, saying, okay, well, we don't care so much about what's happening inside. We care about what's happening so much on the outside in terms of, they just don't want to see people loitering around and they don't want to contribute to some of the crimes and some of the illegal activity that's happening right now. And we understand those concerns for sure. And I think we have a four-pronged approach to address that. I should also say, too, that what we're proposing internally will have a direct result of what happens outside the facility. The first-class treatment that we intend to provide, the collaborative care model that we intend to provide to do comprehensive assessment on individuals and adding their pre-treatment support in terms of people accessing a bed and not getting turned away. That's a critical component of this project. So undoubtedly, to answer your question, certainly it was safety.
Mr. Krochek, my second question is on the issue of safety and a concern that the residents have. Is that pertaining maybe to the use of the park? That's the park that we're talking about. You're saying that you're intending to put in $30,000 to upgrade it. Is that the concern that people had more about the people that are frequenting that park?
It was one element of it, but I think predominantly was around just, who's going to be visiting the facility, providing illegal drugs to people that are, they know there's a critical mass of people struggling with their addiction, so they can come there and provide drugs. People leaving the facility, I mentioned treatment duration. People leaving, it's a voluntary facility, people leaving before their treatment duration and wanting a fix, if you will, to try to get some drugs or alcohol in the area. So those are the types of concerns.
If we were to approve this project, what guarantee can you give to the residents in the community that you can help and resolve the issue that's situated there now with all the drug, the drinking, the undesirables that are frequenting that park at all hours of the day and all at night? What can you assure them with the facilities such as that, that you might be able to eliminate the problem that exists there now?
Well, I would certainly, as I mentioned, the Good Neighbor Agreement, that's a starting point. I think we've been very transparent. Having everybody at the table, establishing a community security council of key stakeholders, and trying to do definitely a scan of what the current issues are and making sure that we address it. I mean, again, we want to be held accountable to that. Establishing relationships with the Winnipeg Police Service. That's a key relationship that we need to establish. So we have established, but we need to build on. These types of things. I mean, again, the back park is one element to it, but I think there's a lot of work to do in terms of establishing further relationships and making sure that we create that overarching framework to be able to deliver what we say we're going to deliver.
You know, I tend to agree with you on some of the issues. I know there is a problem, but one thing that is a stigma in my mind, you know, as to what happens, I know the calls that I've been getting in my office, and this is not only now, but this has been going on for some time. Anytime you have a park that's not monitored, it's not supervised, you'll always have the undesirables will be frequenting, they'll be doing whatever they want to do, and causes a headache for the residents living in the community. This is the concern that I have. And that I'm sure that with the what you're proposing, there should be an element in there to be able to remedy that problem that exists there with security, whatever the case may be. I'll be touching on the issue about the park later on. Even you had said $30,000 for, you know, to upgrade, mm-hmm. which I'll be speaking to it later. I understand that there's a number of people that are here, Madam Clerk, that want to speak, and some are just here for information, and some are here just to voice their support for the applicant. Is there anything else, Mr. Krochek, you may have before I ask for the others? Councillor Paktikin.
Quick question. How many staff will you be employing at this River Point Center?
Sorry, how many staff?
How many staff?
We're going to have 110 staff, but the peak staff hours are probably about 79 staff. So this is including the services that are coming in, like the integrated addition services. This is including shared resources such as kitchen staff, security, housekeeping. We've kind of all counted that in as part of the mix.
As part of that mix, is there security? As part of
yeah.
That, there is.
Yeah, okay. There certainly is. So it'll be a 24-hour security 7 days a week.
Yeah. I'm good, Mr. Chairman.
City Council? Okay, and I'm going to ask the names of the people that have submitted their names here. First is Jakes Gagne, 2109 Portage Avenue, wants to speak. Would you like to come and speak? We have a lot of people that want to speak, so if you could limit your presentation, and if there is a repeat, don't repeat. You have anything new that you'd like to add and your reason for supporting this project. And we'll give 10 minutes. Edna, can you set the clock? We'll give 10 minutes to each delegation that wants to speak. Go ahead.
Mr. Councillor, Council. My name is Jacques Gagne, for the record. I'm the Regional Manager of Security Services and Special Projects for the Winnipeg Regional Health Authority, and we're a primary stakeholder in support of this project. For the record, should this project go forward, the Winnipeg Regional Health Authority has committed to redeploy its facility management resources and my original security program to 146 Magnus to support this whole enterprise. On a go-forward basis, we have in the past 12 months provided ongoing security support for the existing location through our contract services with OBO Security, as well as the mobile patrol unit for which I'm responsible. So there has been an ongoing presence on that street in that neighborhood. I can state that within the past 12 months, my mobile patrol unit has encountered suspicious activity in collateral streets on either side of Magnus and have reported same to the Winnipeg Police Service for action. So in response to the queries earlier about public safety and the adjacent park to 146 Magnus, I would state for the record that with the presence of security 24/7 at that site, including mobile and static security guards at the facility itself, it would be a continual security presence, including ongoing patrols of the grounds, and any suspicious activity would be immediately reported to Winnipeg Police Service for investigation.
Good, thank you. Any counselor, any questions? Thank you, sir. Next, wishing to speak is Robert Rumbelowski at 500-321 McDermott Avenue. You'll be given the same amount of time, and you've heard what the former delegation has spoken.
I did.
So you give us any new information?
For the record, my name is Robert Wiglowski. I'm a principal with MMP Architects. We're the prime consultant for this project. And this evening, I'd like to talk briefly just about some of the comments that I have addressed at both public hearings or public open houses that I did attend. And I thought it would be prudent to share some of the questions that were asked of me so I can bring clarification to some of the issues. One of the questions that I received often from different individuals was, why couldn't the existing facility be renovated into another personal care home? Why did we have to change the use? Another question was perhaps a different use, such as a school. And that's what I want to talk briefly about. So in my world, when we look at a building like this, we have to classify it, and we're bound by prescriptive rules in building code. And this particular building falls into a building classification, which is referred to as a B2 classification. A B2 classification is the most restrictive type of building that we can build. It's hospitals, personal care homes, penitentiaries. And the level of finishes, the quality, the safety measures, life support systems are all elevated of that of a typical commercial or a retail type of occupancy. Because this is a personal care home, it falls into that category, or it was a personal care home. If it were to be purchased and refurbished as a reused personal care home, it would be subject to all of the new rules and regulations that the B2 hospitals and personal care homes are subject to. And these include such things as additional exiting widths, wider stairwells, wider elevators, smoke control, higher ASHRAE mechanical standards. The list goes on, and it's part of a subset of the B2 classification that is very specific and very prescriptive to hospitals and personal care homes. So in a summary, if somebody were to come in and purchase this building and say, I'd like to reuse it as a personal care home, the amount of money that they would spend would be so incredibly invasive just to bring it up to current standards under the National Building Code. Now, the type of facility that we're renovating is still a B2, however, a much lesser restrictive classification of B2, which allows us to utilize much of the existing systems the way they are. And for this reason, the building cannot be reused easily as another personal care home. Because of the column spacing and the fairly narrow rooms, using the facility as a school would not be practical either. You're currently dealing with corridors that run directly down the middle of hallways. Structure would have to be altered. And any type of educational facility that would go into this building would be restricted to small outbreak rooms as opposed to larger classrooms. So it wouldn't make any sense either. So what do you do with a building like this? If you leave it and you try to revamp it as a B2 personal care home, you've heard that it can't be done. And so you have to consider what kind of inventory and structure that you've got, and it could still be utilized as a B2, and it should be some form of a medical clinic, which is exactly what the River Point project is all about. So in my opinion, professionally, the reuse of this building is exactly consistent with its best use, with the infrastructure that is currently in place. Thank you.
Any questions, Councillor? Thank you, sir. The next three are not noted as they want to speak, but I'll call out the names. Chris D'Souza at 124 Barber Street. You want to speak? Those of you who'd like to speak, please come downstairs. We wouldn't have to wait too long before you come down. There we go.
Thank you, councillors. For the record, I was appointed the chair of the subcommittee for the Magna Center on behalf of the Point Douglas Residence Committee back in 2008. And it consisted of two other individuals that are not able to be here today. And we have met with Carrie Irvin Ross over time. We have met with the previous directors of the AFM. We have met with all that have been noted in the above presentation. So what I'm here to say is, as an individual, because I can't speak for the ones that are not here, the Magna Center has satisfied many asks that we have provided in regards to the park. There was a Main Street project that was on a consistent patrol where they were picking up individuals from that park and taking them for treatment to the Main Street project. The police was there. So there's many things that were satisfied in the safety, because the safety was always part of it. The three main ones that came out over these consultations was safety, image, and property value. So in speaking to that, the biggest one is we don't want these people there. And I want to start off by saying a quote from Mother Teresa. It says, if you judge others, you will not have no time to help them. And as a community resident, I felt that is not something that Point Douglas is about, because we are about caring, compassionate, understanding, and continue to help. There are many things I can say, but in this brief time that I have, I would like to point out a couple of main ones. Is addicts are viewed as criminals, they're viewed as prostitutes, they're viewed as many things. But I'm here to say today, I am an addict. And I am proud to be one. In fact, in 1999, I attempted to jump off the bridge of Disraeli Bridge. And if it wasn't for a treatment center, I would not be standing before you. And I am grateful to this day, and it actually turns out that today is my 9 years. And I have helped many people along the way, and there are many people like me who are out there, who are constantly helping the troubled youth, the people who have not been properly diagnosed. And this facility does do that. So it would be a shame for us to lose this gem. There is going to be the Human Rights Museum. There's going to be the football stadium. Well, we have an opportunity to set a precedent to have a class one treatment facility in our neighborhood and showcase something that hasn't been done in the past. And it hasn't been done in the past. It's always been improving. And I want to take you back a few years ago to when the kids from Norquay School wrote a letter to Miguel Jean, the Governor General, and said, please come to a neighborhood, we need help. And she came, and from that came many people, and many people continue to come to help. And that same class is now currently doing a project called Share the Warmth, which is part of Float. And in that dialogue, what they put in there, and it's these kids that have put this, they said, we don't want to be sitting in our family room where there's drinking and fighting. So this treatment facility does provide help that's really needed. It's not a want, it's a need. And I ask you to look beyond, because it's not about the building, in my eyes. It's not about the image. It's not about the prestige. It's not about those things. It's about helping people. It's about a healing center. This is not a crack house. This is not a drug house. This is not a booze can. This is not a massage parlor. This is a healing center. This is treatment, and it has been presented by doctors and physicians that it's a recognized disease. It has been recognized by the Government of Canada, by the Manitoba, and by the City of Winnipeg. So to deny people for treatment as a community, I know personally, I would think it would be wrong. And standing here as evidence that certainly I did not take part in any activity that is perceived out there, but I can certainly say in the 9 years I have been part of Teen Touch, I have been part of United Way, I have been part of Beat the Street, I have been part of the Shalom Center, I have been part of Cancer Manitoba, I have been part of many organizations, and the only reason that I would be able to help that is because of the treatment facility that was there for me when I needed it. And I am a resident, I am a citizen, and most importantly, I am a human being. Thanks.
Thank you. Just like to remind you, back in 1985, when I had the pleasure of meeting with Mother Teresa, the late Mother Teresa, I class her as a Saint Teresa, when I was instrumental in establishing a shelter for battered women and children, and there was so much public output in the area, people did not understand. I hope you'd have to understand here. People that are here do have a concern because they live in the community, and you have to send a message to them that this will work for anybody, but it's got to be teamwork. You know, that's what I'm looking for. And at that time, when I was dealing with Mother Teresa, the shelter that I was provided for took me about 6 months to get it across because it was laid over so many times. The first of its kind, west of Toronto, and it's successful. It's working, but it takes a lot of time, folks. I tell you, you know, you can't just push something in there because the problem that exists in the area right now, the calls I'm getting, is that what's going on there now with the kind of people that are going there. And it's not that people be going to the shelter or anything. It's that people find a place they can go and do what they want with their drugs and drinking, whatever. Okay, I've had my piece. Now, the next is Ian Rabb of 879 Grover Avenue. Do you want to say a few words?
Hi, my name is Ian Rabb, for the record. And first and foremost, I visited that property for about 15 years visiting a grandparent, so I'm familiar with the property. And second of all, I'm the founder of and president of a nonprofit called 210 Recovery, and we started third stage housing for people coming out of AFM. We have 30 beds at this point. And just a little bit about myself. You know, I grew up in Winnipeg in an upper middle class neighborhood, and I got brought back to Winnipeg just over 8 years ago, and my first contact in this city was at the Addictions Foundation in Manitoba, and I've been sober ever since. So the number one reason I'm standing here today in support of this is because the service that this center is going to provide is essential in our community in Winnipeg. There is great difficulty in navigating a system which has many barriers for people like me, and I do it every day when I work with people that are navigating the system from detox straight through to third stage housing now. And a facility of this nature would provide an essential, helpful place, healing and transforming for individuals to go on and ultimately give back to society. In my experience in the last couple of years with 210 Recovery, the last place that drugs and alcohol come close to is a facility of this type or houses where sober, clean drug addicts and alcoholics live. And that has been my experience. The people that are in these facilities are people that are actually making change in their life, as I was over eight years ago. And I just wanted to speak in support of this project because I think it is absolutely a no-brainer when it comes to our community. And I appreciate the effort that everybody's put into this from the Point Douglas area because it's essential in our community. Thanks.
Thank you. Joanne Mullis, 175 Harper Avenue.
For the record, my name is Joanne Mullis. I'm the founding director of a 40-bed facility in Elmwood. I have been there 17 years, and it was started because I found that people did not have a safe place to go when they came out of rehabs on short terms. They were going back to hotel rooms. They were going back to bad relationships. They were not knowing what to do with themselves. And so this facility was started so that people would be able to come from all walks of life. They come from Stony Mountain, they come from Milner Ridge, they come from Detox, I speak there once a month. They come from Health Science Center, who sends me people from chemical withdrawal, from psychiatric wards. And it specializes in fathers who want to keep their children and who need help to do that. And we have found that people stay away. We have 32 cameras running at all times inside and around the properties. The park behind us was just filled with needles. Kids couldn't even play in that park. When we went there and turned our cameras on that park, when we invited constables to come over and talk and have coffee there, the needles disappeared. The people did not want to be on cameras, and our place became the safest block in the neighborhood. Our neighbors know that if they need help, someone from our facility will do it. When there was a murder down the street, blocks from us, the police came and used our cameras to catch the people going in and out buildings. And so as encouragement to the people who are in a neighborhood, when you have the police coming at a phone call instantly, you know your streets are well prepared, paroled by people who know what they're doing. When there's cameras up, people don't want to have their face there to be handed over. And so there is a great deal of need for Winnipeggers to give a hand up to people who are broken. We are not going to get away from broken people. They're going to be in my neighborhood, your neighborhood. Some of them aren't obvious. Some of them are very obvious. But the best thing we can do for our streets, for our children, for our communities, is give these people a chance to start life over, a facility where they can get on meds and they're not wandering the streets unsupervised, where they can get help for grandchildren and husbands. And we need to be a people of support. And I believe that about Winnipeg. I believe that we are people who do give people a hand up. And having a facility like this, where it will be monitored and safe, and that people can change their lives will only benefit all of us in Winnipeg. Because if we leave broken people on the street to themselves with no help, no support, no medications, we're not helping anybody.
Thank you. Tom Elston, 720 McDermott Avenue.
Hi, my name is Tom Alston. I'm a project coordinator with the Winnipeg Regional Health Authority Capital Planning and Construction Department. And I'm here today representing Mr. Richard Craig, who's the manager of that department, is unable to be here in person. If it's okay, I'd like to read a short letter from Mr. Craig addressing the project. As a representative for the owner of this property, including the existing building, I'd like to submit the following commentary for consideration by Councillors Lazarenko, O'Shaughnessy, and Pactican. The provincial ministers of health and healthy living have designated this building as a center for addictions treatment within the jurisdiction of the Winnipeg Regional Health Authority. The Capital Planning Department will be managing the design, construction, and renovation portions of the project to convert the existing abandoned facility into an appropriate site for treatment of patients voluntarily wishing to deal with their addictions. A team of professional consultants from a variety of fields has been assembled and is prepared to help make this goal a reality. The team consists of architects, structural, mechanical, and electrical engineers, as well as landscape architects. The entire team is committed to create a facility that complements the neighborhood in which it is built while respecting the needs and desires of the local residents and businesses. As well, the design team will work with the City of Winnipeg to enhance some elements of the existing infrastructure that require improvement. Some specific details have been identified in a number of public consultation meetings held over the past 5 to 6 months. The executive director for the proposed River Point Center has hosted these meetings so that area residents can have an opportunity to voice their concerns, share their ideas, and learn about the way this center will operate. I believe there's been a good representation from all parties, and discussions have revealed issues that our designers will consider and have considered for incorporation into the design. It should be noted that the WRHA intends to relocate its facilities management department offices to this site. These offices have handled the administration of building maintenance and site security for all of the WRHA. The regional director, administrative assistant, and managers within the department will work at this location. Having offices of the WRHA facilities management particular security at this site recognizes the importance that local residents have placed on security during the public consultation process, and you've heard from Jacques Gagné already this evening. The WRHA has acknowledged that concern and is planning to provide appropriate security coverage. This coverage consists of 24-hour on-site security guards, closed-circuit television surveillance of the building and its grounds, as well as direct links to a private security service and the City of Winnipeg Police Service. Overall design will incorporate features that promote safety for clients, staff, and the general public. The need for a facility of this type is clear. The need to provide increased care for individuals with addictions has grown over the years. Existing treatment centers are reaching capacity, and a larger site is necessary in order to address present forecasts. Reusing an existing building located in a therapeutic setting shows responsible environmental development and land use. It makes use of existing municipal services and it enhances the community by upgrading an existing local park, reducing on-site parking, providing traffic control measures, and widening of an existing back lane. These measures are intended to address the concerns of the neighborhood residents. It's the goal of everyone involved in the project to provide services that promote rehabilitation of clients who are seeking help. We recognize and respect the concerns of the local residents. We continue to work with them and with you to find a mutual solutions as work on this much-needed facility progresses with help from all. Thank you for your time and consideration in granting our request for conditional use. Yours sincerely, Mr. Richard Craig, the manager of the Capital Planning Department of the Winnipeg Regional Health Authority.
Thank you.
Just for my 2 cents, I've attended all of the community consultation meetings. I've talked with people in the community, and I do believe that we have listened and have responded, and we'll continue to do that if this project were to go ahead. I see it as only a benefit to the community, and I hope that you'll consider these points today. Thanks.
Thank you. We're not finished. Those who are want to speak in support, we have about 27 people that will be speaking or want to speak in opposition. So if the rest of you be brief, because you're repeating some of the comments that have been made by the former speakers and also by the applicant. Next is Peter Harjan at 407 Chalmers.
Good evening. My name is Peter Harjan. I speak to you as a resident of a similar facility that's being proposed. Again, it's a 40-bed treatment center in a residential area that I've had to go through and now volunteer at. I was born and raised in Winnipeg, lived in the Wolseley area, Charleswood, St. James. Now I'm out in the Elmwood area. And it's an area I was never quite sure of because I was never used to it out there. And I find I feel safer there now than I have anywhere else. As a resident there and someone who's gone through treatment, I find the importance of people going there voluntarily very important, because the guys and the people work together to keep it a safe place, whether it be the building, the grounds, the area. Okay. Now in my volunteer position, I do a lot of the security for our property. And I find most of my information about anything that may or may not be going on comes from the actual residents, from the people that are trying to straighten up, trying to stay on the clean and sober. Cameras are great. We need to have proof. We need to have things on record. But I think as a volunteer basis, when people show up and they truly want to get help, they're a number one defense of people coming into the area that are there to sell, are there to create trouble. And I think that speaks as highly as anything else. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Jean, is it Doucha or Doucha, at 953 Dell Inglis Avenue, Winnipeg. Okay, thank you. Next is John Barodi, 1013 Scurfield Boulevard. Go ahead.
For the record, my name is John Barodi, and I'm here tonight before you as the CEO for the Addictions Foundation of Manitoba. I'm going to keep my comments brief. I'm not going to talk about prevalence and the need for this facility, but I am going to talk about two reasons why our organization is involved in this partnership. Number one, I think this opportunity can become one of those centers of excellence that we'll see nationally. This is the first time we're going to see an opportunity to bring together a whole host of services under one roof, dedicated to providing services to male clients. I'm not aware across the country of where this has been done. The second reason for us is waiting lists are prevalent through all of our programs. By moving our James Toll Center to the Magnus site, it'll give us an opportunity to have a vacant building on Portage Avenue such that we can backfill with much-needed services for female clients. So we do have a lot to gain but through this initiative. The other thing I'd like to address very briefly is some of the concerns that I heard while attending the community meetings as well. I was fortunate to have been a participant. I did listen, and I did respond to a lot of the concerns that were raised by the community. There were really three things that I think stuck out in my mind that I heard throughout the two sessions that I attended. Number one was the feeling by the community that property values would be affected negatively by the introduction of this site. I can't speak, or I don't think we can forecast or guarantee what's going to happen with property values over time. But I can talk about my past 10 years and our current site. I don't believe that we've had a negative impact on people being able to sell their property or on property values. In fact, in talking to some real estate agents, I've been told that what people are getting and the length of time that houses are on the market has not been affected by anything in the area. In fact, I would throw out, When you look at the investment that the government's going to be making in this building, probably in the order of around $15 million, I would think that having that site upgraded to what's going to be would have a positive impact on the area, because it's going to change that building and make it look, I think, a lot more or a lot better to the community than it does today. Another thing I heard was the potential impact of our clients on the community. A couple of things I want to highlight with our clients, because what we're actually doing is moving an existing service that sits right now at 1041 Portage Avenue and moving it over to Magnus. Everything that's in those walls right now will move to Magnus. And what do we have? We have a group of clients that are motivated, a group of clients that want to be there. They come to us saying, we need help. So they're not being pushed or forced. The second thing I want to highlight is that those clients come from all over the province. But if we look at the clients in the city of Winnipeg, they're represented probably by every postal code. So if you look at the typical client that we always think being addicted, we probably think of the client that's sitting on Main Street. We have some of those. We also have business people. We also have people with families. We also have people who are gainfully employed, who want to turn their lives around and return to their community. So the type of client we have is there to make change, is not there to cause problems. The last thing that we've heard is that people think that our clients might be influenced by an element that's down in a park just adjacent to this property. I would throw out a proposal. My feeling is that once you fix up the building, once you increase security and lighting, once you put people in that building who want to make a change in their life, who actually are against the activity that's probably taking place on the riverbank, you're going to find those people move out of that area because they're going to feel very comfortable. So in summary, I think this initiative is needed by the city. I think it's actually needed by that community. And I would suggest that there won't be a negative impact by introducing this building to that community. They're going to find over time it's going to be quite positive. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you. Kay Cullinger, 122 Riverton. You okay with the... Okay, thank you. Barry Hammond and Mary Furness of 4116 Grove Avenue, or Grove Street, I should say. You okay? Thank you. Elaine Bishop, 159 Austin Street North. She left. How do you pronounce? Melba Sanofsky, 1231-235 Burroughs Avenue. No? Herb Thompson, 14341 Westwood Drive or Avenue. No? Okay.
Madam Clerk, this takes the those who have been support. Now we will dealing with those.
Clerks, advise me, is there anyone here that would like to speak in favor of the application?
Whose name has not been called.
Whose name has not been called. Harry Finnegan. No. Okay, thank you. Okay, now we'll be dealing with the those who are opposed, in opposition. Some might be just asking for some information. The first one is Larry's Sitch, 115 Magnus Avenue, Winnipeg, in opposition. Would you like to speak?
Yes, I would.
Thank you.
I have submitted a couple of letters that are on the agenda, but I have additional copies if you would like to have those. Okay, my name is Larissa Sitch, and I live at 115 Magnus Avenue. I'm a master's degree social worker, and I've lived across from the east parking lot of the Magnus Avenue property since 1950, so I'm a long-term resident. And I am strongly opposed to the rezoning of this property to accommodate the Magnus Center. First and foremost, I'd like to make it very clear that I fully agree with the need to establish a facility of this nature somewhere in the city of Winnipeg or in its surrounding area. But I'm adamantly opposed to having this type of facility at the former Sharon Home location, and I have a number of reasons. As has been already cited, safety issues are paramount. We are already overburdened with major facilities that house or attract individuals with serious behavioral mental health issues who are a threat to the safety and peace of mind of the residents and the workers in the area. We have the, right on the corners of Magnus and Main, we have two facilities, the Stony Mountain Penitentiary's Halfway House, the Osborne Center, and we have the Micah House on the other corner, and we also have a center for abused women, which is not in itself an issue, but other issues that come along with that. And we have a number of other facilities in the nearby areas. We've had one murder as a result of the correctional Osborne Center, which was two doors away from that facility. So I think we have a reason to be concerned. With the Micah House, they do have people with mental health issues coming there for assistance. And with the shelter, which is on the south side of the former Sharon home, we're not concerned with the women there, of course, but we are concerned with their possibly violent partners that might come into the area. And we also have concerns for them, because I am sure that the women in that shelter would not feel very comfortable knowing that within meters of that facility, there's another facility housing men with very similar traits to those that they have been abused by. And I think that many of them will be. Mr. okay. It's my understanding from Mr. Ian Krochuk, the executive director of the proposed Magnus Center, that Magnus Center will be accepting parolees from the correctional institutions for addictions treatment, and also that many of the other clients will have prior criminal backgrounds as well as mental health issues. Now, Mr. Krochuk also advised me that most of the clients would be in treatment for hardcore drug addictions, such as crack cocaine and so forth. And he did state that these clients would be allowed to walk around in the community. Also, should they decide to terminate their treatment or to be ejected from the program, they would simply be allowed to walk out the door and into our community. Now, this he told me personally. As a social worker, I'm very aware that addicts craving their substance will do almost anything to get it as quickly as possible. Should they need money to get that substance, we who live and work close by will likely be the ones who would be accosted, robbed, hurt, possibly even killed, like the person at the Magnus Foods store, from the person from the Osborne Center. Another concern that I have is regarding the security at the Magnus Center. Now, we've been told here and that the security is going to be very, very high class, and that it was going to be hourly rounds and so on. Now, I live right beside the building, and as of what I've seen going on now, there has not been anything like that happening. There's been no security hourly. It happens not even daily. And so they also had promised us that they would be doing something with the Pritchard Boat Docks Park and the problems that go on there, and that the riverbank and the neighboring streets, and that their security would be taking care of those problems. These were false promises. This is not their property, and they don't have any jurisdiction over what goes on in those areas. So they will only be monitoring their own grounds and their building. They'll have no control over what happens on the streets, and that includes the behavior of their clients and the visitors once they leave the facility. So as far as I'd like to make a statement about the negative image in the property and insurance concerns. We have a concern in the area that there will be a negative image when this particular facility is placed there. And I have talked to people who live outside of the area about it, and my first reaction automatically is, oh, no, not something like that. So it will give it a negative outlook to the rest of the city. Property values, I have spoken to a real estate agent. I've also spoken to a person from an agency that does property insurance. And my fears about that have been corroborated by these people. They have told me that the property values will drop, and that also that it will be very difficult to get insurance if a person coming into the area was applying for such, because that building would have to be reported as being there. So that is a concern. Now, the other problem I have with it being there is that I have concerns about the success rate of the persons who are there for treatment. I have many concerns for the clients. There are many temptations in the immediate vicinity of the Magnus Center for its clients. The entire area surrounding the center's proposed site abounds with solvent and alcohol abusers in the Pritchard Boat Dogs Park, as has been mentioned, and on the streets on Pritchard, on Magnus Avenues, and on Main Street. Drug abusers are dealing all around the building, on its property, on the parking lots, and on the river path that has just been put through last fall. Addicted sex trade workers and their clients are on the Magnus Center's parking lots frequently or very nearby. There's evidence of hardcore drug use in the yards of two vacant houses on Magnus Avenue, right across from the center's main entrance. Mica House often has passed out addicts lying on its stairs. Addicts are also in the bus shacks and all along Main Street. There's a liquor commission less than a half a block away from the center. There's an animal hospital, a dentist's office, and numerous medical clinics with drugs on hand on Main Street by the bus stops. Resale of prescription drugs has been reported on Main Street also beside the bus stops. Many of the clients of the Magnus Center will reportedly be from the North Point Douglas area. Consequently, they will still be in the area where they have typically dealt in drugs and where their addicted friends are. I have very serious concerns about how all of these temptations could possibly be conducive to effective addictions treatment. Because of these factors that I have listed, I believe that the likelihood of success for the Magnus Center in this location is only minimal at best, and consequently, it doesn't appear to be a good use for government funds. The process that's been employed reach its goals by the proponents of the Magnus Center. They have stated that they have had numerous meetings and consultations and so forth. I would like to disagree with that. They have not done an adequate job of explaining the center's function to residents and business owners in the area. Many individuals still do not have a clear understanding of this undertaking to this day. The plans seem to constantly change. The November 3, 2009 open house did not allow for any open discussion of the modifications of previous plans, nor was it possible to get any clarification from the representatives present. At least I was not able to get any. There's been a refusal by Mr. Ian Krochuk to provide responses in writing to very valid questions raised by my neighbor, Alvin Crozier. Verbal communications have created misunderstandings in the past. And there's been no effort on the part of the proponents to contact my neighbor or myself with any additional information since the meeting that we had with the minister and the other proponents on May 7th. So there's been no follow-through on any meetings with the business owners, which were promised by Mr. Ian Krochuk also. And I discovered quite by accident only a few days prior to the October 13th meeting, public hearing meeting here, that Mr. Krochuk had submitted a proposal dated October 7th, 2009 to improve the Pritchard Boat Dogs Park Plaza. Can I just continue for a minute with that? I had no idea about this. I live beside it.
You've got quite a lengthy report. Can you just summarize within the next minute, please?
Yeah, well, you know, I have a lot of concerns about that park and the proposals that were made because no one consulted with us. We did not know that the consultations with landscape architects or anything were being done. No one advised us of anything. And I have big concerns about what's being proposed for that park. So I did have some other things, but it's in my letters.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Alan Patterson, 129 Selkirk Avenue.
I submitted a letter.
Yes, we have it. Thank you. Aria Duma, 165 Burroughs Avenue. Thank you. Nalia Adderton, 161 Magnus Avenue. Thank you. Jerry Prestru, 167 Magnus Avenue. You want to speak?
For the record, my name is Jerry Prestai, 167 Magnus Avenue. I'm living with my spouse, Krista Hiller, also of 167, and her son, Matthew. Both are unable to be here tonight, but both of us strongly oppose the center on this site. We're in true agreement that a center like this is needed, but not on the site of the former Sharon home. One of our main concerns is safety, if I just may add. I work in the hospital. I'm to be on duty at 6 o'clock. A few times my spouse and I have been up, namely myself. I've gone up and I've had a person knocking on the door, probably high on crack, asking for money. And when you see tattoos or zigzags all over their arm, you don't know if it's a gang member or if there's going to be any repercussions. So needless to say, we have a veranda on the house a few times. I'm always looking over my shoulder when I get into my truck or in my veranda if I've got someone sacked out. The way the things are going with the police, one of the things I've heard before, say if you're Officer Lazarenko on 123 someplace and you have an H, that's a hazard, you'll get good enough police response. Whereas at other times, if you call, yeah, whenever we get a cruiser. So that's one of the big things is, like I say, if I've got someone in my veranda or if my spouse is going out or else if my stepson decides to throw the guy off the premise, there could be, shall we say, serious repercussions. So that's where I'm concerned about safety in that. All in all, I think, like I say, we do need a place, but not in this area. And I'm sorry to say, Ian, I know I did, Krista and I did sign for it, but after talking for about an hour, we felt we had to sign the letter to get rid of him. It was into our supper time, so I apologize.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Alvin Grozier, 125 Magnus Avenue.
I'm Alvin Crozier from 125 Magnus Avenue. I've got numerous concerns about this project being located where it is and the way they're going about it. We were promised extensive consultations, and we basically had two. And the last one's only because they had to have it with us. As far as these email consultations, I've got numerous emails for them, and I know I'm not the only one who have received no response from the applicant. They just basically go unanswered. And as far as these, some of these promises have been made at the June 24th consultation, east of the building, there's four options we were presented with. There's a community garden, basketball half court, seating area with an arbor, parking lot for 10 cars, and they've done none of them. Just before the last public hearing, I found out They were proposing to put a parking lot which is double in size, approximately 20 cars roughly, that we're not consulted with whatsoever. And we seem to have another problem with the Point Douglas Residence Committee, who seems to be representing the applicant. I found out last week that the email address we were given at the June 24th meeting is registered to the Point Douglas Residence Committee. And we also received no report from the June 24th public consultation. There was a little bit of it on the Point Douglas Residence Committee website, not very much. A lot of it was left out. And this park proposal that they have submitted, prepared by Hilderman Thomas Frank Cram, I've read through it, and I live very close to the park. And from what I've seen in here, the problem users rarely travel to the site along Magnus. I live there. A lot of the users do travel along Pritchard mainly, and also Magnus, to and from the park. They can be drunk, pushing their shopping cart down the street, that type of thing. And another thing they've got listed under activity, after interviewing a local merchant who works in the area and walks through the plaza to and from work, little undesirable activity takes place during the day. I live next to that park, and a lot of activity takes place during the day. I've made numerous complaints about it. And as far as the surveillance camera, they've this other considerations. It states the existing camera monitoring the east parking lot of the Magnus Center can be redirected to also capture the plaza space. To my knowledge, there is no camera in that east parking lot. I have a phone number for the building security. When I see something going on there, to phone the building. To my knowledge, there is not a camera there to redirect. And also, I've got concerns about this good neighbor agreement, which we've been promised. So far, the only thing I've seen is an outline of a Magnus Center good neighbor agreement. Until I actually see a good neighbor agreement that actually exists, that states in what way they're going to be conducting themselves outside of the building, and how Magnus Center is going to be held accountable or responsible or anything to this good neighbor agreement, and what the consequences are going to be, and who the consequences will be decided by. And I also have an issue with the lack of trust in the applicant. After the Main Street project tour, I was confronted with these large amount of complaints I was making to the power line regarding the park. The applicant told me that what I was doing was overkill by sending all these photos to the power line regarding complaints I was making about the park. Problem with that is I send my information to the power line on the condition that my identity is kept strictly anonymous, and obviously it wasn't. I did contact the power line. They give me a possible explanation of how that happened. And along with an apology, when I sent an email to the applicant, it was intercepted by Chris D'Souza, who was going to get back to me and forward my letter to Ian. Never heard anything from either one of them. And I also submitted petitions. This is basically on account of the Point Douglas Residence Committee again, because they're more interested in representing the applicant instead of the residents. As myself and among several other residents and businesses went around with our own petition against this proposal, because Chris D'Souza from the Point Douglas Residence Committee was going around with the applicant collecting signatures in favor of it. Chris D'Souza is supposed to be representing all the residents, not just the ones he feels are in favor of it. And that's all I have to say.
Elvin, I would like to remind you that when you send emails, or the applicant or ourselves, we are not allowed to communicate. This is a place where you talk, because this is a public hearing, in the law, eyes of the law, this is where the applicant has to be, application has to be dealt with. You can talk to one another, but I'm sure the reason why the applicant was not able to respond is due to the fact, and I'm sure, Madam Clerk, that this is the case, isn't it?
They wouldn't be able to correspond with the committee members, the Lord Selkirk, what's going on in Community Committee, the councillors, but because this is a public hearing, so the councillors would not be able to respond.
Yeah, I'm sure the applicant, well, I'm sure, you know, it was up to you that if you could have talked to the applicant, I'm sure you must have, you know, because with the holding those public consultations. Because if either one of us would be communicating, could be challenged right here, we would be subject to having to leave the meeting and not being able to participate because we would have already voiced our opinion before that.
It's an impartial hearing body.
Yes, it's a partial hearing body, Alvin. That's what it is.
Okay.
So, thank you. Thank you. Next is Arnold Groot, Corempt, 130 Burroughs Avenue. Okay. Oh boy. Could I see a show of hands? How many of you would like to speak? Okay, when I call out the names, those are you close by, if you could just move a little closer so I wouldn't have to wait. Those of you, there's room for about maybe 10, 12 people in the back of the bench.
Just come down to
the we'd like to gauge your responses too, so we'd like to be able to see.
Pardon? We're not responding. We're listening to the delegation. Pardon? Oh, come on. We'll put a mask on our face. Okay, those of you who'd like to, because, you know, we're going to be here a long time, and people are getting tired. Those of you that want to speak, come to the back there, or you can stand up in the back there. There's some benches. And those of you who don't, sit there. Okay, sir.
Proceed. Yes, my name is Arnold Grootkork. I'm sorry it took me a little while to get down, but I'm strictly opposed to that Magnus Center because a couple of years ago I got attacked in my own driveway at home by a glue sniffer. And that's why I know it's all about, we see them all, I live right at the second house from the end on Burroughs Avenue, and I see them day in, day out. They're high on drugs, they come up from the riverbank, they come from Magnus, from anywhere. But I know of personal experience, I got attacked on a Sunday morning. And I don't want that to happen again to me or to anybody else. Because, you know, it's not safe. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Fred and Barb Landry, 136 Burroughs Avenue.
Hi, my name is Barb Landry from 136 Burroughs Avenue. I had spoken at the last, or actually the first meeting that was held at the Magnus Center, bringing my concerns forward with what was happening with the Sharon home. In my opinion, there is a concentration of these centers being moved to the Point Douglas area with, as previously said, we've already got a women's center and the halfway house for the convicts. I had said at that meeting that my concern was that there was no promise for security in the area, and I had voiced that opinion with wanting a response from them indicating that we would have some safety. And what they indicated to me was that their responsibility was the perimeter only of the building. So it did not matter that there was lighting in the park. There is some lighting there already, and we still have a problem. At the time I spoke at that meeting, there was a tent pitched at the end of Burroughs down the walkway, because they have now made the new river walkway all along Burroughs right down to the forks. So the problem isn't only necessarily behind the building. The problem is all along the walkway. And Burroughs being one street over, We have people parking themselves on the walkway up closer to Burroughs as well. So if their promise is to have security around the center, that is not enough. They have indicated that it is a 7-day program and a 28-day program. The facility is not locked, and the people come and go as they want. And my question to them was, is there a trained professional doctor that is going to be doing the assessments of these people? And I was told no. It was not a trained doctor. Therefore, if they are going to assess people as having a problem, then they better be trained at the assessment, because these people are going to be walking in and out of that building in our neighborhood. Because my understanding is there's programs from 7 to 3, and the people are free to come and go as they want. So that, to me, is a problem with safety to the residents around that area. And I am very much opposed to that being in a residential area, if that is the case. The other thing that my concern was, a previous speaker had indicated that, an architect had indicated that if the facility could not be used as a personal care home because there are strict regulations that have to be met, and he did not view it as a school, so to me, at all costs, he will put that center in there as an addiction facility at all costs, and that's at the residents' costs, in my opinion. They had also indicated that several speakers that were not against the facility had indicated that there was a 40-bed unit in the Elmwood area, but our speaker for the housing district indicated that there is no other facility of this kind. So how can we compare it then to a 40-bed unit in Elmwood? My concern is that I'm hoping that the councillors will take us residents serious, that we have children in this area, and that we are going to have people who are in 7-day programs, which, in my opinion, an addiction cannot be cured in 7 days. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Doug Klim and Jeanette Lavelli, 185 Magnus Avenue. Okay, thank you. Roxanne? How is it? Tony Sims.
Methot.
Hey?
Methot?
Methot? Okay, thank you. Kenneth Taylor and Louise Taylor, 133 Magnus. Okay, two of you. There's Kenneth Taylor and Louise Taylor, 133 Magnus. Okay, passed. Thank you. Matt Milzarek, 113 Selkirk Avenue. And Patricia Milzarek, 113 Selkirk Avenue. Is that you?
That's me.
And Patricia?
That's my wife right there.
Okay, so you listen to him. Okay, thank you. Proceed.
Just for the record, my name is Matt Milzarek. I live at 113 Selkirk Avenue, which my back lane is outlooking exactly at the previous Sharon home. And the activity that I see in on a daily basis is not even close to imaginable. Number one, what I'd like to mention is Mr. D'Souza is not representing any of the residents in the residence, because we strongly oppose this from day one, and all he's trying to do is just convince us that it's a good thing. Number two, Mr. Ian Krochuk is promising us safety, yet the first people that were hired at that facility came to threaten us for me mentioning to them that they shouldn't throw their commercial garbage into our garbage bins, which to me automatically gives them a X for failing for safety. The WRHA patrol, which is supposed to be there on hourly basis, I've seen maybe 3 times, and when I've approached them once, when there was a gentleman passed out on the bench, he says, "Did I call the police?" He didn't want to get his hands dirty with it and drove off. Like Larry said, there's a women's shelter right on the corner, as well as a liquor store, which I don't feel that is probably the best thing to have a rehab facility surrounded. Not only that, these are co-occurring patients that are going to be in there, which tells you something. These people are not going to be treated overnight, especially in 7 days when they're reoccurring. People cannot be helped by looking out a window, looking at drug dealers through their deals. Either way, either direction that you turn and look out a window, there's a drug dealer or a car pulling up with drug activity going on in that neighborhood. The park plans that were supposedly investigated by all these people, not one person from the residence was approached. And I have two small kids that use that park on a daily basis, riding their bike. And I feel that we should have the say on what goes on in there and what would be a good safety precaution for us. That's all, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. You have a question, Councillor? Oh, just a minute. There's a question. Councillor Pacticat.
Yes, sir. Yeah, thanks for your thank you for your presentation. My question to you is, what did you think about the presentation regarding the good neighbor policy?
There is no such thing. Nobody's ever approached us with that. The picture shown on Mr. Ian Krochak's PowerPoint, let me tell you something about that presentation he had. Media was allowed during his presentation when there was a question period between the residents and the facility people. They threw them out of the building, which told me another thing. They didn't want a negative vibe on this Magna Center. So this is how I see everything that we've asked of them, they cannot provide to us on paper, which we can help them hold them accountable for. Everything is just false promises, false jobs, ridiculous promises. Like it's just wish-wash for them to get in there. Once they're in there, then we're, as they say, SOL.
And you mentioned something about a security officer from the Winnipeg Regional Health Authority. Is there something happening at that site right now?
And well, there was one that patrols in a little SUV.
Okay.
It was a gentleman that was passed out on the bench with his pants halfway down, pills everywhere, cigarettes spilled all over the place. I've noticed it when I came back from work. As he approached, I pointed it out to him because he probably didn't even see it out of his vehicle. I approached him and said, can you do something about the fact that there's a gentleman passed out there and he's got a bunch of medicine and pills laying around? His response was, did I call the police? I told him, no, I just pulled up here from coming from work. And I asked him if he would be able to do that since he has the proper training and the means to get them there quicker than I would if he were to call the police.
And my last question is, are you, if the applicant is able to demonstrate, in your opinion, that they're sensitive to some of the concerns that you brought up relative to the park with input and security measures, that you'd be open to this project?
No, I would not, because it's not just the park that's the issue. It's the whole Point Douglas community. There's a drug dealer in every corner. There's a murder once a week. Okay. There's negative all throughout.
So how does, just a quick question, how does that, you told me that you can look out your window and there's a drug transaction going on. How would this particular project contribute to that?
Well, the fact that people are coming for drug treatment, I don't feel that they would get any drug treatment by looking out a window at a drug deal. If you're trying to get away from something, you're not going to be I can't see you get help by looking out a window and dealing with it visually as well.
Okay. I understand where you're coming from. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have two here in the same address, 123 Burroughs Avenue. Brian Hayek and Christopher Marks. Are you together?
Brian is not here right now. He had to go.
Okay.
He didn't have significant comments to add.
Okay. So, and you're Christopher?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. Tonight we've seen in Ian Krochak's presentation several notes about safety mentioned for the first time. For something that has been such a pressing concern, I'm disappointed. Grateful for those indications, but disappointed. And I'm also particularly disappointed at the lack of examples of models elsewhere inside neighborhoods, not on the edge of neighborhoods on a major street. And particularly disappointed that there's been very little put in print about the safety issues of clients in the neighborhood. I might have been reassured if a study had been done. In my experience, no one at the Magnus Center has been seriously willing to discuss the risks their clients pose for community safety, which struck me particularly strongly when I noticed that this, in tonight's hearing agenda, subsection 247, part 3 of the Winnipeg City Charter for conditional uses requires that safety be addressed and it not be adversely affected. There have only been two public meetings or open houses, and in perusing the notes of the first one as submitted, I don't see anything significant on this aspect of safety. At the second meeting on November 3rd, I asked Herb Thompson of the Board of Directors of the Magnus Center about safety, and he stated that most addicts, upon completion of a program, will leave feeling good about themselves and be no safety threat. According to both Ian and Herb, those who leave early will usually wish to get away from the rehab center and quickly remove themselves. These comments clearly offer no serious data and avoid the full scope of safety concerns. Safety concerns often involve rather small numbers of people or offenders, and these merely off-the-cuff remarks correspond to nothing in print from Magnus Center Incorporated, nothing they might be accountable for in the future. Such a poverty of response is hardly acceptable for those proposing one of the biggest rehab centers Winnipeg has ever seen. Locals know what hard times are and know when they're being given a bum's rush out the door to their questions. Many felt left out at the second meeting in the cold, and even one person who had leg problems was refused a chair to be able to sit down during that consultation. It strikes me that this is a sign of some degree of unfriendliness and a bad sign for where things would go. Pursuing the safety question further, I asked Herb and Ian for examples of similar institutions and residential neighborhoods well off of arterials amidst dense single and double occupancy housing. And the best response was the St. Norbert facility that has been mentioned. I went to Google Earth and counted about 7 homes adjacent to this facility, another 7 or so behind them. I do not count the hotel or the farmer's market that are adjacent towards Pembina Highway because those uses belong to commercial areas. First, the number of homes in that area are far less than, say, 85 immediately affected in our neighborhood. Second, the proposal involves not only many more homes, but also a much larger population of clients coming for treatment, and the scale of rehabilitation services would compound problems. Given the minimalist answers, I suspect the applicant has not felt they need to justify the impacts of the extraordinary reclassification zoning they request. And this doesn't seem appropriate for this site. A Vancouver study on the Public Safety Canada website indicates that substance abuse needs to be located away from areas of high substance abuse. People who want to recover need to be away from the thing they're recovering from. Whereas the proposed site is a focal point of drug deals, prostitution, and public drunkenness, it may pose more hazards than benefits at this point. Since the applicant is unwilling to provide a study of safety issues for the neighborhood, we should inquire what they might be afraid to talk about. And this same Public Safety Canada website, which I have listed here, is regarding a Vancouver study of 322 people addicted to heroin and cocaine. And in it, they found that voluntary rehab, at least there, is a bargaining chip to reduce criminal punishment. 71% of these clients had a prison record. 86% did not complete treatment. 65% withdrew voluntarily, 20% involuntarily. Over half had new criminal charges, and 88 tested positive for drugs within 6 months. Coupled with these statistics and the answer Herb gave me saying that public institutions like the proposed Magnus Center, Inc., cannot turn down a client because of a previous prison record, endangers can be ominous for residents, who would feel safe at home knowing they can be easily observed through their windows by someone in a revolving door with Stony Mountain Penitentiary, that prying eyes of people driven to violence and crime by their addictions and by hardcore prison experiences would be entering into their lives intimately. And there's a question as to what kind of good neighbors these people would be, particularly because there's a lot of children walking along that riverbank who are unsupervised, many of them fairly young. There's also been mention of the vulnerable people in institutions immediately at hand in the neighborhood, some of them, many of them within visible sight of the building. And I really wonder if it's fair to expose these people to such a record. It comes down to what is healthy for 1,000 people who come and go and live adjacent to this proposed massive rehab center. I think that because they've been unwilling to really answer and do a study on the safety issues, they should be refused at least at this point and told to find an appropriate commercial place for rehabilitation work. We should not accept a plan that leaves clients amidst rampant substance abuse when they want to kick their addictions. And we should keep vulnerable children and other people away from dangerous rehab clients. We all deserve a safe place to live. Thanks.
Thank you. You got a question? A question by Councillor Pachtakin. Please come back.
Thank you for your presentation. What was that study that you were alluding to? What was it? What was the? Who was the proponent on that again?
It's www.publicsafety.gc.ca. I'll give it to you afterwards. .ca /res/CP/res/2008-ES-18-ENG.ASPX. Sorry. It's the way Canada's Public Safety does their website things. It's
they
a study.
Make sure that they don't want you to read it.
I'll give you a copy if you like of my.
Could you?
It's printed here.
Thank you.
I'll take a copy.
Yeah, that was his question.
How many of the public meetings did you attend, sir?
I was unable to attend the first. I attended the second and spoke at great length with Herb, and then I've been in contact with Ian in a bit of a dialogue by email and phone since then on safety issues.
So from your perspective, your thoughts are there any concerns that would sway you to support the project?
A thorough study of safety issues, including what drugs are being treated and what are the safety issues known for those drugs to be treated. Obviously, the center might treat other drugs in the future, but it would be nice to know what these, particularly the hardcore drugs are, and what the likelihood of violence is when someone is still addicted to this substance and leaving treatment. Secondly, to be precise about how they plan to treat different diseases. The same website suggested that these two issues, heroin and cocaine, are particularly difficult to treat and a longer-term treatment is needful. So attention to those details in a presentation that they're really trying to do first-class work.
Okay.
And then any comparable study of what public safety issues are when these kinds of facilities are located in a residential neighborhood.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Alex Camargo at 270 Austin Street North. Passed. Peter Morgan, 132 Selkirk Avenue. You passed. Nicole Belliger, 166 Manitoba Avenue. And there's also 166 Manitoba Avenue, Kenneth Friesen. Are you together?
Yes.
So who's going to come to speak? Okay, and you'll listen. Okay, good. Okay, Nicole.
Hi, yeah. My name is Nicole Bilodeau. I live at 166 Manitoba.
and I'm here with myself, my boyfriend, and his kid. We've been just living in the area for just over a year now, and when we looked at the house back in June 2008, we're right beside the Sharon home, like right beside it on the southwest side. And when we looked at the house back in June 2008, we were skeptical about moving to the north end. I'm from St. Boniface. He's from Transcona. Like I said, we were skeptical about moving, but we thought it was pretty good to get a house on the east side and then to be right beside an old folks home. But like that's pretty good. But then we moved in September 2008, and then to find that the facility was now vacant, and then we're wondering what happened to everybody until somebody approached us later on to say that everything was in the works and they want to open up this. So now we're wondering about, you know, what to do right now. But my main concern is, yeah, definitely safety. As I leave at 5:45 in the morning, my boyfriend leaves at 6:30. We have four kids that are going to be leaving throughout the day, and just the coming and going and being right beside the facility could cause some problems, not for us. And just a main concern about safety. Myself, I can see it doesn't take a rocket science to see that this should not come into this area. Like an LC down the corner, everything else in the neighborhood. That definitely it would be a good building to have, but just to move it into another area where there's already so much that's over here every night, like cop cars going, ambulance and everything going, like, you know, a good facility to have, but if they could just move it somewhere else would be a lot better. And like I said, my main concern is basically the safety, and if anything else could be changed, that'd be good. Just basically the safety part concern.
So your main concern is safety.
Yes. Well, I said that too. Like I said, we're right beside the building, and we can see the back of everything. So if they have anything going on outside, they can see right into our yard, our backyard. We can see right into theirs. So they can see right to our house where, you know, everything that we see. But I'm also concerned for all the other neighbors in the area too, for them and their family and their kids and that, like I said, a great facility to have, but if they could move it somewhere else.
Thank you. Yeah. Next is Doreen and Les Key, 918 Kilkenny. That's you?
No, she had to leave.
Oh, she had to leave. Okay, thank you. Roger and Pam and Allison Grovet, 182 Main Street.
Magnus.
I have Main Street. Which one is it?
It's 182 Magnus.
Well, I've got Main Street, 182 Main.
My mind must have been altered.
Okay, now who's going to speak? Pardon?
My daughter first, and then I'll speak.
Okay. And your name is?
Allison.
Allison, okay, Allison. Go to it.
I guess my biggest concern personally would be safety. We've lived in this area for probably about 6 years now, and I have had, I'm just nervous.
That's okay. Take your time.
Just, you know, walking down the street, Canada Day, a couple years ago, I was attacked, me and my brother, and it was in the middle of the day. Nothing was done. A bunch of people saw us, you know, nothing happened. The cops never did anything. We've had a number of incidents. There has been a drunk driver hit our tree in the back, almost hit my parents' car. Again and again, we have had things happen in this area. This is without even a rehab center in it, with inviting more problems to happen. So my biggest thing is I'm already very nervous being in the area. And when you're inviting extra things like this, why you would want to do that? I think a facility like this is definitely needed. You can walk down Main, you can take a bus down Main and see that something like this is needed. You know, nobody is willing to help these people, and it's awesome that somebody wants to do this, but not in the area. It makes no sense. There's a halfway house, you have a women's shelter, you have a liquor mart within half a block of this place, not to mention the park, right? Like, they're saying they're willing to add $30,000 into this park. That is great. It'll make it a good area. But adding extra flowers and lights isn't going to make an area safe, you know? And a lot of the times when you do call Winnipeg Police, they are so bogged down, their number one concern isn't a sniffer, you know, in your backyard who's not an immediate threat to you. But obviously it is a threat to us, right? So my number one thing is safety. If this goes through, you know, I work two jobs. I come home late sometimes. I'm scared to walk sometimes from my house, you know, from the car to the house. It's as simple as that. So, you know, they're willing to put video cameras, right? Patrolling hourly. A lot can happen in an hour. A lot can happen in an hour. You know, they are willing to put the cameras, which is great, but can they go beyond their property? Are they going to patrol the extra streets? Are they going to patrol by the river, by the park? You know, these are all things that are bothering me about this. And it is a big concern of mine that the safety of not only women, you know, the women's shelters right there, but also kids. There's kids all over that street, right on Magnus. So I just wanted to add that.
Thank you. Roger?
Hello. I'm Roger Drouet. I live at 182 Magnus. I was a returning officer for the 2003 provincial election. I know a lot of people, and I'm really nervous, too. This is kind of intimidating for me, and I did look after the election in 2003, so I know a lot of people are just intimidated to speak, and I can understand that. You know, I heard a lot of words about police and safety in the area and everything. Well, when we moved in this area, it was the Sharon home, like people have said, now it wants to be an addiction center. When I asked the applicants why this building, mainly what I got was because it's available. No other reason. I asked for information about the success of such a program. Nothing was in writing. Nothing was put. Just, hey, the building's available. It's all good. It's wonderful. Let's go do this thing. Well, every neighbor that faces this building or is attached to the building in any way on both sides of the street and on the intersecting streets, Manitoba, Pritchard, every one of them oppose this. It's directly in the middle of a resident. It's not like when you speak of police, well, sure, the present location of the AFM, which treats addictions like this, is on Portage Avenue when it doesn't face any residents. Behind it is Manitoba Public Insurance. To the side of it, which is a big deterrent as far as I'm concerned, the addicts, when they look out their window, they're going to see the RCMP building. Now, separating this building from any residence is a back alley, and the houses aren't facing the facility. They're facing the street and running a different direction altogether. Here, someone in the addiction center, like some of the people here have said, will look out their windows and be looking into people's homes. Every window on the south side of this facility faces a shelter that I'm not really supposed to even talk about because I was because I was a returning officer, and the public is not supposed to know about this place. But they will be looking directly out there. And I can see possibility of someone who's in there for treatment for abuse and battering a woman looking out the window, because every window on the south side of that building, it faces south and north. It doesn't face east and west. Can see this shelter. So a man could be in there for battering and abusing his wife and look out the window and see her going for treatment, which is, I don't know. To me, it doesn't make sense, and I think everybody that lives on the street feels the same way. The Point Douglas Committee, they canvassed the neighborhood in favor of the applicant, but they had more people opposed to the applicant than for the applicant, and yet they claimed to represent us. Well, they broke every one of their constitutional bylaws, and I have a copy of it here, mainly one to be a voice for the Point Douglas residents. That was, this is their guiding principles, Article 2 in the constitutional bylaws of the Point Douglas Residents Committee. Number one, to be a voice for the Point Douglas residents. Well, most of us oppose it, so why aren't they opposing it? They're supposed to be our voice. Number six. The Point Douglas Residents Committee will have respect for all people. How can they respect us if we oppose something and they're for it? They're breaking their own constitutional bylaws. I've served on many boards in this city, and I've never broken a constitutional bylaw that I swore to uphold. And number seven on these points, and this is their guiding principles, I think they've broken them all, by the way. There's 10 of them, but I'm only going to speak of these three. The PDRC will be representative of the community. How can they claim to represent our community when all the people who live directly, that will be directly affected by this center, oppose it? And by the way, none of the Point Douglas Residents Committee live on these streets. And I ask, too, how many of these Point Douglas people who have spoken in favor of it, who may or may not be on this committee, because I've never seen the committee, they've never informed me of when they meet or anything else, but how many of them will be working for this center? They have backgrounds in this. Actually, how many of them will be working for it? And a lot of the people that spoke in favor of it, they're ex-addicts. Sure, they want treatment center, and sure, we as residents say there should be a treatment center, but it's like, we look at it like this, where's the sanity in this? Because would you put a pedophile treatment center in the middle of a schoolyard? I mean, this is what it is to us. We look at it, we see the criminal activity that's going on there now. The drug houses, the crack addiction, meth is now being a problem there, the pathway. Like my daughter said, putting a few lights and flowers in a park is not going to stop it. Now, we phone now, and Larice knows this, and Alvin knows this, and I know this, because we are the ones who stopped the sniffers from going there temporarily by going and kicking them out of the place. The police could never help. They never responded. The Point Douglas Committee was never there. Residents Committee was never there. I've never seen them in my neighborhood. So that's safety. Sure it is. I also would like to know who owns this building and how did they get the building? It was owned by the Sharon Home representative. Who owns it now and how did they get it? And someone spoke at 200 residents that are in favor of the project. I've never seen any of them at any of the meetings or any of the public house openings. Almost everybody there, 95% or more, were always opposed to this project. So it isn't a big happy thing for us. We do not want this here. We have enough people in crisis in our neighborhood as it is. Does the city really want to put that many people in crisis into one area? I mean, we have the halfway house, five clinics that treat drug addicts with methadone on Main Street. There's four hotels that have people in crisis in them, drinking in them all the time. There's a shelter, there's a Mica house, it goes on and on. And our community has been a constant problem with people with high needs wandering through our community. We just don't think that this is a wise place to have. Even in the Philippines, I talked to one neighbor, he's an artist, he wants to show that the community is a good place to live by doing an art show, but he can't. He's traumatized just by the thought of this going in there. He said in the Philippines, they're smart enough there to put this type of addiction center in a rural area. It shouldn't even be around people. I've spoke to people that work in these kind of things, not that run them, that just work there and are with the people every day, not that sit behind a desk and direct people what to do. They said this center should not go in this area. It should be out of a residential area altogether. And that's why the applicant has to apply to the city for rezoning. We don't have a voice. We can't meet anywhere. There's none of us here who are a leader. The residents are just concerned. And there's a number of them that aren't here that are really concerned. They don't feel they have the voice. They feel helpless. You two are the only voices we have. The applicant doesn't voice any of our concerns. We've asked them over and over. They haven't. Winnipeg Health or whatever the other boards were, those people don't voice our concerns. Or the only people that can help us are you two. And you can say, no, this is a bad idea. It shouldn't be put in this area. You can go and say, yes, we need more information, we need more studies, or you can just rubber stamp it through. That's why a lot of people don't want to speak here, because they feel that is what is going to happen, that it's just going to be rubber stamped through, that slid under the rug, like the halfway house. They promised that that would be a wonderful place. Well, we had a murder 2 doors down from it. We all live in constant fear there now, and we all know because of what we see that putting more addicts into a neighborhood that is full of addicts isn't going to increase our safety. No one can tell me my wife can go out to her car in the morning when it's dark in the winter and not be afraid. Because as my daughter said, a lot can happen in an hour. And we phoned the police many, numerous times in our location, and I've got no response. When my daughter talked about the guy who hit our car and hit our neighbor's fence and hit our other neighbor's van, there was a policeman sitting right on the street on Manitoba Avenue. I went and talked to him. I knew where the suspect was, where the vehicle was. He said, don't worry, sir. Go back to your house. We'll have someone here in no time. I waited 2 days for a police officer to show up. This was a crime in process. So,
Thank you, Roger.
I'm pretty passionate about this, and I apologize for that.
Roger, I understand your position. You talked about the Point Douglas Resident Association. They were supportive of this application?
Yes.
Okay, now, who's the chair of that residence?
I don't know. I've never seen them.
Apparently, I heard it. He has said that there's no crack houses in the area.
Pardon me?
I believe he's the one that said one time to us that there are no crack houses in the area. They cleaned them out.
Well, the residents know better. They drive through the parking lot of the Sharon home to get to their crack house, one of the main ones. You know, we see the traffic. Larice knows. I used to walk my dog down to the park at night because I like to be visible in my community. I live there. And she knows what I've seen, and I know what she has seen. There's been hookers with their johns parked right beside the Sharon home doing their business. We have to go up and look right in the windows before they leave. And that goes up and down all our streets there. And these aren't, well, I would say if a woman is going that far, she's probably doing drugs. I think most street workers are.
Mm-hmm. Councillor Packing, you had a question?
Yes. Thank you very much for taking the time to speak to us today. I mean, it's a known fact. I don't know where I'm going with this yet, but I just want to say that if you asked anybody in the city of Winnipeg, hey, there's going to be a project in the neighborhood, it's possibly a drug rehab center, would you be in favor of it? Most people, 9.5 times out of 10, would probably say, no, they're not in favor of it. But if you delve deeper, what I wanted to ask you was, can you speak to some of the points that this applicant had addressed today relative to the security, to the influx of staffing, lighting, that they're looking at doing community partnerships, that type of thing?
Sure. Like I said, and Larice said this, they only have jurisdiction on their own property. They can't come into my yard and protect my wife. They won't do that. Even if they have, like my daughter said, even if they have patrols every hour, a lot can happen in an hour. Drug addicts are like the other gentleman that spoke with right there, I forget his name. Drug addicts will be looking in windows. This treatment for such a program, usually a drug addict has to go into treatment at least twice, if not more and more and more. So the first treatment usually has done nothing for them. Well, I shouldn't say nothing, but they're more, statistics are there. As for the park, it's never been And Larice knows this, and Alvin knows this, because they face the park. They're right on. And the reason why we kick people out of there, because they would come there and do sniff and crack or whatever they were doing all the time. The police could never help with that. The residents' committee never helped with that. This applicant has never helped with that. And they say, okay, we will do this friendly neighborhood. Okay, are they agreeing to do that if the application goes through? Or will they do this anyway, whether the application goes through or not? Like, do we have to say, yes, we'll take this giant experiment as long as we let you in there, and then find out it doesn't work later, and then another one of our neighbors is murdered? They told us the same thing when, and not me because I didn't live in there, but I've talked to one of the business owners there. They told them the same thing when they put the halfway house in there, that there wasn't going to be dangerous offenders in there. Now, the court cannot not allow them to go there. So you have dangerous offenders in there, and it shows it by one of our neighbors being murdered by one of them, two doors from that. But just from my house itself, I can see the halfway house, the Micah house, Sharon home, the women's shelter, and the alcohol store, one of the clinics that treats addicts. And this is just for my home. There's also another addiction center that that people have failed to mention, that's on Manitoba and Salter. Now, would you want all this in your community? Would your community be able to handle this number of high needs people in your community? Would you want it there? Well, you know, my family and me, we moved in 7 years ago. We'll probably just move out, but a lot of people won't be able to. They'll be stuck there. And I think there's roving bands of addicts in the city now, and if you put them all together in one area, you're going to have more problems, not less.
And what's the current use of the building right now, the old Sharon home?
It's empty. From what I understand, the Point Douglas Residence Committee meets there. That's the only tenant I know of, besides the security, which we're in the community quite a bit, and we don't see them a lot.
As far as you know, the majority of the building is vacant,
yes.
Not utilized.
Well, the Point Douglas Residence Committee did not meet in this building until the applicant put forward. And they really didn't talk to the residents because they didn't talk to anybody in me and my family. And so when they're saying we've heard they've had consultations with the residents, no one on the street, because everybody on the streets, and I'm talking Burroughs Avenue, Magnus Avenue, Pritchard Avenue, Manitoba Avenue, and Selkirk Avenue. Every home that I know of that will be in direct contact with a facility such this opposes it. I have enough on my plate already without having to deal with addicts too.
Roger, do you know who the applicant is?
From what I understand, it's Mr. Ian Krawczyk.
It's the provincial government.
Right. Okay, the provincial
government. And one thing that really surprises me, there's not one representative from the provincial government or from the federal government who are in power in Manitoba have made an effort to be here or even to speak on behalf of nothing.
Well, No, I don't know if this is true. We hear things, and I'm not a politician or anything, but I heard this building was purchased like for a dollar. Now, are they just sitting with an empty building that needs to be filled so they're going to...
But, Rogers, beside the point, if the building is purchased or not, it's what the applicants are, and this is where it gets me, folks, and I tell you, I've been on this now for some time. What gets me is when you have a government that makes a proposal, a request, and they do not come. We are open. We're sitting here in front of you. We have to make a decision. We are in a hot seat, but you don't see them being in a hot seat, and they represent you just as well as we do, and they're not there. And I tend to agree with the concerns that you have, because I don't want to see what's happening right now, ladies and gentlemen. This is pitting against neighbors. You got one organization is pitted against another organization, and that is wrong.
And I don't want to see that happen in that area, because this is exactly what is happening. It seems that some are pushing, some are not. And, you know, and there's no one can get into to stay united, to be on the same issue, speak to the same issue, speak to the problems, you know that exist. Is not to have some are hiding. And look, and I'm talking from experience. I've been around a long time, and I've seen these things come and go in such a way that was a disaster. If you don't have unity, if you don't have people that are in the same wavelength, forget it. It's not going to work. And the one thing is that I've always said, you know, where are the government representatives? You see them all over the place, being in the newsletters and saying, oh, I'm here at the official opening, doing this. But when it comes into the crucial part, the very important part of a community's way of life, they should be there. And I'm just sorry, I'm not going against the elected people. I'm not campaigning. But I'm just saying, you know, what is right, and that's where it stands.
Yes, I agree with that. Sure.
Councillor Pachtakin, another question?
Yeah, it's a bit of a comment and a question. I'm not sure where I'm going to vote on this particular issue yet, and it's coming to light for me now. You pointed it out, or your daughter pointed it out, about the Liquor Mart and other things around the area. And it also kind of saddens me that with regards to the project, that there are so many people that did sign the petition. Would it surprise you to know that in my neighborhood, about 50 feet from my own house, and I just live off of Logan, pretty high needs area. It's one of the poorest neighborhoods in Winnipeg, in all of Canada. And there was a housing project. There's a 20 unit Aboriginal transitional housing project called Place of Hope. And what it was, there was several community consultations over the course of 22 months. And the neighborhood was vehemently against it. And I didn't support it myself either. But it went to council, and my colleague saw the wisdom of the project and approved it. So, despite the fact that I didn't like it, it went through. It's there today. It's constructed on Logan. And it is actually, it sort of made me look and say, wow, this place actually gives people a second, third, fourth, fifth chance in life. A lot of these folks were drug addicts, they were prisoners, they were pedophiles, they were whatever the case may be, they were the worst of society, and they were looking for a chance to turn around their lives and reintegrate into society. And, there's never been any problems, and it's been constructed for the last 5 years now. And all I can say was that just looking upon that, I'm just reflecting on that, I'm just trying to see, what's happening here. It's almost like what happened for me 5 years ago. And so I'm not sure where I'm going to go on this yet, but I do appreciate your delegation and the delegations on both sides, and we still have more to go.
Yeah, we have to make one last comment then.
Okay, Roger, go ahead.
Yes, I can see where you'd be concerned at the beginning, but let's not forget what we stated here. We already have a high number of these types of facilities in our neighborhood, a high number. And like people said, addict is not, if you're addicted, it doesn't have to do with anything to do with money or position or anything. They come from all walks of life. Why isn't there an addiction center in Tuxedo? Why do we all have, most of our neighbors, and the reason why we object to this, we feel that the city is pushing everything east or south from Main Street, Higgins, trying to push it all the way into our neighborhood, all their problems. Because this area over here is being fixed up and new buildings are going, and they're trying to just push it into us. And that's how most of us feel. And we have enough already on our plate. Like, we have all these, I can honestly see all these places from my door. Now, I don't think, why didn't Mr. Ian Krawczyk, who's going to be running, he talks about workers that live in the area, why didn't he rent one of the houses that are across the street from us? Why didn't he buy that home? No, he wouldn't live in this neighborhood. It's too dangerous. When I was returning officer for Point Douglas, which is a big area provincially, I asked an off-duty policeman and his son came to do some enumerating. And so I told him the area I was going to send them into. And these guys were both over 6 feet, off-duty one was an off-duty policeman, and it was his son. And I said, go in there with your son. He said, are you crazy? I would never go into an area like that. The police don't go into that park down there by the river. They don't go down there. It's not safe. I can't see anybody this applicant is going to get to police that park successfully. Yet kids walk there to school.
Thanks, Roger. We have to continue. We have four more.
Thank you.
Crystal Siemens, 161 Burroughs Avenue. Would you like to speak or? Thank you. Paul from 95 Main Street, and also Tom Lucas from 955 Main Street. There are two. Would you like to speak, or you've had enough, heard enough? Because we'll just finish off. We're going to take a short little break for the to visit, see how the washrooms are doing, and we have just one more left here: Ted Bobier and Amy at 174 Manitoba Avenue. You want to speak? Where is he?
Good evening, gentlemen. Sorry because I'm not prepared to make us to speak today, but you know, this is also my concern since I live in 174 Manitoba Avenue. I'm a family man. I got two daughters, ages from 10 and 13 years old. So every morning, we wait for the school bus in front of that Magnus Center. Every morning, I always, you know, go with them because, you know, I'm concerned with the environment. We live in that place for just almost about a year now. The only things that we got that place because we know that that place, that Sharon home, is a senior house. So we have an idea that a senior house, this should be a quiet and peaceful place. And it's so frustrating that after a year, we have learned that this Sharon home, this senior house, will be converted to a drug addiction and alcoholic center for drug addiction and alcoholics. And this is my main concern because, you know, the name of the center itself could explain itself. This is a center for drug addicts and alcoholics. And my main concern is we are dealing with unpredictable people here, people with unpredictable mind. You know, so, and in this regards, I believe that this will create a potential danger and anxiety to the people around the area. You know, as me myself is an artist, and I see Point Douglas, I see North End in a different perspective. Just like what the gentleman says here, that, you know, I'm planning to have a show regarding the North End to divert the people's perspective, the negative perspective about the North End. I want to see North End in a different perspective. Because people, for a long time, are looking for the North End in a different way, in a negative way. People around our area are using us and making us as a reference point for the most undesirable, the most violent place in Winnipeg in which to live in because of what is happening in the area. So in this regard, people are using us as a reference point for that negativity. Why not you make a project that will enhance the image of the North End in this regard? So thank you very much.
Thank you. Folks, I'll let the clerk read out the names of people who have come here just for information. We still have to read out the names. And
first off, is there anyone else that wishes to speak in opposition to the application whose name has not been called? For information, we have Sean Finnegan. Sean Finnegan, wish to speak? Harry Finnegan, for information?
Good evening, councillors and ladies and gentlemen. My name is Harry Finnegan. I'm principal of McKay Finnegan and Associates. We're community and urban planning consultants, and we were hired by the applicant a few months back to help with the public consultation process that was followed. And I'm here to speak for information only on two points. One has to do with public consultation. There's been a number of comments this evening that were made with regards to that. And the second point is the good neighbor agreements. First of all, the public consultation, it had started by the applicant earlier in the summer where there were meetings with groups that had expressed an interest. We got involved in June and helped facilitate a public meeting that was held at the center on June the 24th. And that, as I understand it, the report, which is a pretty extensive document, was submitted by the applicant as part of their application. So my understanding is that it is a public record. I can tell you that it was really well attended. We had 135 people. Most, by far the majority, were from people in the immediate area. And there were a diversity of viewpoints. And I really sympathize with councillors when you're faced with a situation where there is such a diversity of viewpoints. But I can tell you that at the meeting, the applicants were very clear in terms of what they were proposing. They had representatives from the different partnering organizations, AFM and others, that talked about the kinds of services that they were proposing to see happening out of that building. There also was an attempt made. We had a landscape architect at that meeting, and there was an attempt made to provide feedback on what should happen with the property adjacent to the river and also the park. And sheets were handed out, and one of the people speaking in opposition referred to the sheet where there were different concepts that were presented, and people were asked for their comments to fill out on that sheet. Two people did that. My understanding is that what's now before you in terms of a proposed parking lot is simply a response to what the Public Works had asked for in terms of removing some parking. But my understanding is that whatever happens on the site is still up for input by the community. But there was definitely an attempt made at that public meeting to get people's views on what should happen, both with the park and with the property, the applicant's property on the east side. All viewpoints were heard. I can tell you that it's one of the most difficult public meetings I've chaired, and councillors, some of you are aware of the fact that I got this gray hair, honestly, by some of the initiatives I've been involved with. But what struck me at that meeting is the fact that even though emotions were strong and on both sides, that everybody was very respectful, and I find that as something that is something to take note of, and it was very commendable that people were able to have discussion and still respect each other's, even though they might disagree. The second part, the second significant part of the public consultation happened on November 3rd, and it was at the recommendation of your public service, the planning department, that we did go with an open house format. I think in retrospect that was a good thing to do, because what it did is it provided an opportunity for people to go and speak to, whether it was board members from the Magna Center, now it's called River Point Center, or to speak to the architect, or to speak to the Winnipeg Regional Health Authority in terms of how they manage buildings. I think the open house was an appropriate approach for the follow-up. So I think in terms of public consultation, I think the applicant did really go out of their way to hear people and to try to respond. With regards to the good neighbor agreements, it's a pretty new concept in Canada. It's been in existence in the United Kingdom since the early 1990s. There's been research that's been done by York University in the UK, and it has shown that when it is used as a tool for bringing together a proponent for transitional housing, like we're talking about here this evening, and an existing neighborhood, that it has proven effective in terms of providing a vehicle to actually address issues before they become issues, or if issues do arise, to actually rectify them. So in terms of a planning a tool, it's been very effective in the UK. I am involved with a major project in downtown Edmonton, and it's Boyle Renaissance, and they're developing a good neighbor agreement for that particular initiative. The City of Calgary is encouraging all applicants for transitional housing to adopt good neighbor agreements. The most recent one is Mustard Seed in downtown Calgary. So I think they do provide an opportunity to have accountability to the neighborhoods by applicants. It's proven in the UK. I think the fact that what I observed, the respect that both sides showed at that public meeting suggests to me that if you decide to approve this application and it does go ahead, that it does have the potential to help in a proactive way address any issues going forward. So I just wanted to provide these comments from the perspective of the public consultation and the good neighbor agreements for your information.
Thank you. A question? Councillor Paktikin.
Thank you, Harry, for the presentation. So with respect to the good neighbor agreement, and you said it's sort of a new thing that we're using here in Canada, take me through that. How does that work? So if this project goes through, this River Point Center, what would they do if there was, how would they take in concerns and how do they address it?
Well, they did submit a draft that was put together from what they understood some of the issues were, and it is marked very big capital letters draft. If the approval was given to proceed, what they would do is invite all parties to the table, including residents that have expressed an interest in what's being proposed, with representatives of the resident committee, people from the city, both Winnipeg Police Services and others that can help help clearly identify what are the issues right now and what are the kinds of things that can be done by others as well as the River Point Center to address them. We heard this evening, for example, what was being discussed is the idea of using the in-house security in a different way with their cameras and those kinds of things. So it starts off by engaging people, discussing, clarifying what the issues are, and then developing something in writing that people sign, and that provides the commitment and the direction on how to work together going forward. But right now, it's very difficult for the applicant to do much more than have a draft. That comes also with regards to plans for parks, et cetera, until they know that they're actually going to be functioning out of the building. It's proposals at this point. But I do believe, as I said, that if it is approved, that given what we know in other cities, that it is a good tool.
Thank you.
Mr. Finnegan. When you had your public consultation, was that the good neighbor agreement talked about at all?
Yes, it was. And it actually is in the appendix to the report also. It was discussed at that point. And the reason that it even became a topic is because we already knew from the earlier meetings that they had with residents and the minister is that some of the issues could be dealt with through such an agreement.
Thank you. Madam Clerk, is there any more?
Mari Clark. Yeah.
Thank you.
Wish to speak? No. Wayne Whalen, do you wish to speak? Christopher Friesen. Les O'Neill. Karen Strew. Howard Warren. Pardon me? And Eileen Baggett. Okay.
She's gone.
Is there anyone folks, else that wishes to speak for information?
Because if not, we'll adjourn for about 5 minutes, and we'll reconvene with the applicant having the rebuttal on this issue. So we'll just adjourn for about 5 minutes. If anyone needs to use the bathrooms, they're just down the...
Right where you came in, there's a set of stairs going down. Once you go down the stairs, the ladies is on your east side and the men's is on the west side.
Thank you.
are you doing, Emma? Oh, good idea. Yeah, do you know how? Thanks.
before we proceed, let the planner clear up a few things.
Okay.
There's a misunderstanding with,
yeah, yeah.
with the
just
residents.
Remind me.
Let John Winchup, you'll recognize John Winchup. He's the guy that wants to speak.
Yeah.
Or if he's not there, then whoever.
So I hope that we.
Do you want me to get Glendoni's attention?
Where is he?
He's right up here.
Yeah.
Or do you want to give him another?
Let's keep him here.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, the administration, we're going to be starting very shortly. And the applicant, would the applicant please come forward, get yourself ready. You'll be making a summation on this. And if you could address some of the issues that were raised here today by the delegation. Mr. Krochek, I'm sure you were taking notes of the delegation as they were making their presentation.
Sure.
And if you could address that to the best of your capability.
So thank you for the opportunity to come back and hopefully clarify some information and address some of the concerns we're voicing. I'm sure you can appreciate, obviously, there's a lot of information, so I'm going to try to not go into in the old stuff and try to address some of the new information. The concerns addressed around hourly external rounds, and as I mentioned in my presentation, we did increase the OBO hourly external rounds on the exterior of the building after the June 24th public meeting. And actually, I do have a copy of the logs that we are using currently.
Copy of the what?
Of an external hourly log round that our internal security actually used. They initial it off, so it's a copy of a blank, and actually just to show that actually we are exercising due diligence. I don't need to submit it.
No, don't, because you didn't submit it before.
Yeah, okay.
That's right.
I want to talk a little bit about the assessment piece, which I think will hopefully address some of the concerns. When someone walks in or calls our facility, we do have trained personnel that are going to address their concerns. We're calling it a collaborative care team. So we have different professionals from different disciplines. We have psychiatric nurses, social workers, psychologists, nurse practitioners. When we were assessing whether or not this was an idea to pursue, it was all about filling gaps, doing an environmental scan in the mental health and addictions community and trying to make refinements. One way we decided to do that is through a collaborative care team, to be able to address every needs of that client as they walk in the door or they phone. So they are trained professionals. As John Brody from the AFM mentioned, we're hoping this will be a CODI Center of Excellence, so a Co-Occurring Disorders Initiative Center of Excellence for the city of Winnipeg, maybe Manitoba. That does not come easily. It takes a commitment on the part of us to provide education and training opportunities, not just for people that work in the mental health and addictions community, but also people in the surrounding community. To build a healthy community. So that's definitely one of our agendas is going forward, should we be successful. To address the idea of having a liquor commission on a corner, we don't have to look any further than AFM's location on Portage Avenue right now. They have two blocks away, they have a liquor commission. St. Norbert Foundation along Pembina Highway and South Pembina Highway, they have a St. Norbert Hotel. To address the concern around potentially moving this type of concept into an area that's more isolated. As I mentioned to one of the residents today or yesterday, we don't operate in a vacuum. We need to know that what we're providing and we're planting seeds, people can readily go back to their lives. Creating kind of that type of atmosphere where you're away from the city, away from your supports, away from public access, really isn't in the best interest of good treatment outcomes. I also want to address the idea that emails weren't returned, I wasn't readily accessible. And I really I'd have to respectfully disagree with that. I actually have emails here that I saved because it was a big part of what my position was has been over the last 7 months is the community consultation piece. I got emails asking me about, can we have a conflict of interest policy from your board of directors? No problem. We sent out a conflict of interest policy. Can I have a copy of draft copy of the Good Neighbor Agreement? Absolutely. It's a draft copy, and I heard the gentleman, as Harry had mentioned as well, it's draft for a reason. I mean, it was introduced on June 24th with the hope that the community will take this document in unison with us and move the document forward. It has to be community inclusive for it to be effective. To address the concerns about not enough information, what we did, we kind of had a balanced approach in terms of we had the public meeting in June, we had the tours of BHF and AFM and Main Street Project in July and early August. Then we actually submitted an article in early September in the Point newsletter. And really what that was doing was thanking everybody for participating in the public meeting on June 24th, talking about what are some of the updates in the project and what we need to do to go forward, that type of thing. And I was being very sensitive about the language because I know a lot of people have said, well, no, this is going to get pushed through. And I've told people, I've told them on the doorsteps, on sidewalks, that would be news to me, being the only employee of Riverpoint Center and knowing that there's actually a process, a public hearing process that we need to proceed with. Councilor Lazarenko, just to speak a little bit more specifically around the Pritchard-Boltgog Plaza improvements, we would hope that in our security improvements with the WHA to actually have cameras at the back part of our property line to make sure that the eyes are on the park, and to also mention your reference to working as a team, because we can't do this alone. We certainly can't do this alone, and we are realistic about the limitations of resources with the Winnipeg Police Service. But they have been at the table, and I find that they've been fairly accessible for us since we started this project, or since I began my position in February of this year. So it takes cooperation with, you know, groups like Citizens on Patrol, maybe expanding catchment areas, traditional catchment areas, or downtown biz, neighborhood watch, these types of things, so that we are expanding our catchment area and being good citizens. Heard reference as well to that addiction can't be cured in 7 days. And I just want to clarify that the only 7 to 10 day program that we have that has those time parameters is our withdrawal management unit. And I would certainly agree that addiction cannot be cured in 7 to 10 days. What we're proposing here is a continuum of care under one roof. A person walks in, if they require withdrawal management, they go to a withdrawal management program, it's voluntary. Come for 7 to 10 days. We should encourage people to go to a first stage treatment program like AFM is proposing to offer. So, yeah, absolutely. We do see it as a continuum and certainly can't be addressed in 7 days. Withdrawal symptoms, yes, potentially, but not the addiction spectrum. In regards to the Point Douglas Residence Committee, back in, I guess it was mid to late April, I was approached by the former chair whether or not there was space available at the 146 Magnus Avenue site. I knew full well that what that might look like if they came into that site. And knowing full well that if we want to establish community partnerships, if we wanted to have the ability to say, okay, we're saying we want to provide access to community groups and what have you. Well, this is an opportunity to do it. What happens behind closed doors is that those folks, whether it's Executive Director, Chris D'Souza, the chair, have held me and the organization accountable every step of the way. You know, they've been helpful for me from the standpoint to give me a temperature check of what's happening in the community and what the level of opposition is and the level of support. So I would say, in a microcosm, they have held me accountable. Just in regards to proximity of benchmarks or residential facilities, I heard it was said tonight the investigation via the medium of Google Earth and the St. Norbert Foundation or Behavioral Health Foundation. I have to tell you that going there, you'll get firsthand a good idea of how many residential homes it would affect. Going to the south area of the facility. Yes, certainly you walk out the front doors, you see Pembina Highway going south and north. But there's a dramatic residential neighborhood going on for blocks going south of that facility. In the immediate parking lot of Behavioral Health Foundation is an elementary school. And they've had no issues with that elementary school. Like, the elementary school have seen them as great partners. As I mentioned in my previous presentation, the people that come into these programs for that short period of time, no matter how long a period of time it is, they take a sense of ownership as to where they are. They take a sense of ownership because it's a voluntary program of what they want to accomplish in that facility. And that should never be understated. In regards to provincial representation, I would indicate that we have had provincial representation during our consultation process. We had a meeting with the Honorable Kerry Irvin Ross, Minister of Health and Living at the time in May. We had Fran Schellenberg, who is the Executive Director of Mental Health and Addictions for the Province of Manitoba, present at our public meeting in June. We had Arlene Wilgosh, who happens to be the Chair of the Board of Directors for River Point Center, as well as the Deputy Minister of Health, present at the open house to answer questions. Unfortunately, Arlene could not join us tonight. She had a desire to attend tonight. Unfortunately, with the H1N1, she just got held up and was late, and unfortunately, she's not able to attend tonight. But there was an intention on her behalf to attend tonight and speak on our behalf. Just to clarify the presentation, the WRHA are the facility managers of the building. They own the building. They purchased it from Sharon Home, not for $1. Again, should we be successful, this is not a money-making venture for the WRHA or for us. I heard that we're going to make money off. That's not our intention. We're a nonprofit organization. And the WRHA, in our lease arrangement with them, is cost recovery. You know, they outsource services, and we pay for the services, and no one makes anything as a profit. So I want to clarify that as well. And I think that's probably all I'd like to clarify at the present time, unless there's questions or anything. Further clarify information.
Mr. Krochek, you had said that some of the cabinet ministers, you had talks with them?
Pardon me?
You had talks with the cabinet minister from the province of Manitoba?
Yes.
And they couldn't come? Couldn't they have sent their representative?
Well,
another cabinet minister would have come in their place?
Yeah, like Arlene Wilgosh was sent as a representative, who's the deputy minister of health. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, with the H1N1 stuff, she could not attend tonight.
Any questions, Councillor?
Just following up on some concerns that were brought forward from the delegations with respect to your patients receiving care in your facility. Do they have the ability to, enjoy the neighborhood, like walking around, whatever the case may be, and what level of supervision are you providing?
That's an excellent question. So to break it down for you, so a first-stage residential client, actually, I'll back up. Withdrawal management in the beginning of the continuum. These are individuals there for 7 to 10 days. They're withdrawn from drugs and alcohol, right? So they're not wandering the neighborhood at all. The idea is that they're there on the unit. They actually don't even take meals down in our proposed cafeteria. They would actually take meals upstairs. They would actually attend an AA, CA, or NA group on the unit. To show you how it's a little bit different, a first stage residential client is there for 28 days, the whole point is that they want to take part in their treatment, they participate, they do their laundry, they take an ownership of their surroundings. They might attend evening groups, like AA group, but come back. If there's any walks in the neighborhood, and I can tell you firsthand, having worked for the AFM in the past, we did any walks in the community, it was supervised by one staff. That would be our intention as well. I can tell you firsthand, and on those walks, people are very respectful around the neighborhood, whether it's swearing, even walking on someone's front lawn. They just don't do it. Even budding cigarettes, they just don't. There's a sense of ownership over that. It's all part and parcel of the treatment they want to be successful in.
Okay, thank you for that. My next question is, there was also some information brought forward about relative to the patients receiving care, what type of drugs they were on in the past, and you mentioned professional staff, and that's good.
Yes.
But how does that interlace with the type of drugs these folks were using before?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, a lot of different types of street drugs, you know, your alcohol, marijuana, crack cocaine, crystal meth, these types of drugs. Part of being a Cody Center of Excellence, part of being a facility that I think, as part of the piece of the pie for this, is a significant education and training component. We want to be a first-class facility in terms of people getting the latest and greatest information as best practice, and not just learn it, but implement it, and then come back and share with that community what they learned. And who benefits? It's the client that benefits. I mean, that's what we're here for.
And finally, with respect to the Good Neighbor Agreement, how do you personally see this playing out within the neighborhood? Like, what do you want to see happen?
Well, I'd love to see active participation from a variety of different stakeholders. Should we be successful in this application? This is just one of the many hurdles, I think, in terms of establishing relationship that we need to jump and overcome. If we are successful, I think right off the bat, we need to gather a group of stakeholders together to figure out who wants to be a part of this, what makes sense, that we don't certainly step on the toes of groups that already exist, because that's really important as well. We're here to be an integrated facility inside the community, and that comes with a lot of deliberate thought.
So that means hearing some of the tough questions and some of the tough concerns of residences and dealing with them?
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I would remind everyone that I'm 0001 employee. You know, I'm the one employee of Riverpoint Center. Should we be successful? I mean, we're able to add resources. We're able to take a lot of this stuff forward fairly quickly. Good Neighbor Agreement's one prime example of that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, that's Councillor Pactican. Yes, we're ready.
Okay, Mr. Chairperson.
Right?
Yeah, just a second here. Let me get it.
Page 7.
We're doing the subdivision rezoning.
Okay. It's the application number 1. Subdivision and rezoning.
Mr. Chairperson, I'll move that the report of the Winnipeg Public Service be taken as read.
All in favor, country carried.
I'll move that the receipt of public representations be concluded.